Europe in my backyard.
L'Europa in casa nostra.
Europa in mi casa.
Un'inchiesta radiofonica sulla politica di coesione europea.
Radijsko poručanje o evropski kohezijski politiki.
Europe in my backyard.
Radio reporting.
Un'inchiesta.
Radio reportage.
Un spazio radiofonico sobre la politica europea de coesión.
Az európai kohéziós politika nyomában.
Radio reporting.
Radio reportage.
On European cohesion policy.
Über die europäische Kohäsionspolitik.
So today we're going to be joined by Kieran O'Driscoll, Policy and Research Officer for European Movement Ireland. And then in the second half of the show, I'm going to be chatting with Francie O'Donnell. She is the Social Inclusion and Programme Lead at the Dublin City Volunteer Centre. So first up, I should hopefully be joined on the line by Kieran O'Driscoll from European Movement Ireland. Hi Kieran, how are you?
Hey there, how are you today?
I am good. All the better for speaking to you. So let's start off, shall we? So what is European Movement Ireland? What exactly does the organisation do?
Yeah, no problem. Our main role for European Movement Ireland is to kind of bring people closer to kind of what's happening in the European Union. And we've been doing that now since 1954, when we were first set up. Originally, we kind of campaigned for kind of Ireland to join the EU. Then we were involved in the campaign then to join that referendum in 50 years ago now this year. And we've kind of continued that on now with different projects. So like one of our projects now would be the Blue Star Program, where mm-hmm. we help kind of primary school kids, give the resources to the teachers to help them explain kind of what Europe is about. Could be about the geography or culture or cuisine and stuff like that. And another project then we ran as well with the European Parliament office in Dublin is NASC CSO. So NASC is an Irish word for connection, and is where we kind of helped CEOs of different kind of companies and organizations in Ireland to kind of meet up with MEPs online, of course, because this was all last year. So that was kind of one of the main, that was another project that we do. And we do other things as well with kind of EU jobs. We're kind of big into promoting that and encouraging people to take up those roles and everything else. So that's just a flavour of the kind of stuff that we do on our weekly basis.
Yeah, that's very broad, isn't it? It's a lot broader than you imagine. You're the Policy and Research Officer for EMI. So what does your job involve in? Can you kind of explain to us what does a Policy and Research Officer do?
Yeah, no problem. So like we, in terms of my role, it's kind of, I work a lot with different colleagues, so it might be to help write out different publications. So we do our Just the Facts series, where we kind of bring up stuff about, you know, what's happening in the EU. So we did one on Article 16 now last year, and a more recent one now that I think has just gone out this week then, is always to do with EU policy. Another thing then will be to kind of help kind of prepare maybe speaking notes for colleagues who might be engaging in different events, or then kind of giving other kind of, you know, support. So like today now I'm calling from Cork, where from 6:30 at the Clayton Hotel, we're having our kind of Cork Town Hall as part of the Conference on the Future of Europe, where kind of, you know, people are going to be, you know, coming in to kind of talk about different issues, about what they think about the EU, you know, is it doing too much, too little, or is it just right, kind of the Goldilocks effect there. And my role then was just to support colleagues in kind of producing documentation and kind of speaking notes and so on in terms of that, or maybe some kind of information to help people who are coming in to kind of understand the issues that we'll be talking about this evening. So it's many faces. There's a lot of going on. To kind of, as I always remind my colleagues, you know, no week is ever the same in terms of the work that I do, which is very. Which is great to have, you know, in an organisation like that, you know, week to week, there's always different things to do or different challenges. So I'm there now since October 2019 now, and it's been a great two and a bit years now with the European Movement Ireland.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're wearing lots of different hats, obviously, in this job. It's not as straightforward as it seems. So EMI, as an organisation, what would you say are the main goals of the organisation?
The main goals of European Movement Ireland, it will be just kind of to help bring people closer to Europe in terms of what it's doing, and then like that, trying to kind of make that connection in terms of how it relates to people. Like we were very lucky with Brexit, where it was this vehicle that was, you know, bringing the EU into people's sitting rooms or pubs or conversations, you know, almost on a daily basis for a couple of years. So, with now the kind of Brexit has kind of moved to the kind of, you know, background more or less in terms of people's day-to-day lives. You know, there is that kind of challenge to kind of to keep people engaged about what the EU is doing, because normally what the EU does, it mightn't be very interesting or very engaging, but it is relevant for many people. So our main role then is to break down those kind of barriers to help people be more aware of what the EU is doing.
Yeah, I suppose it's all, a lot of it is about making it more interesting for people. You know, usually you say to people, you mention the EU. And people are kind of look at you confused, or, you know, they don't really understand what it's all about. So it's great that there's, you know, organisations like yourselves that can educate people as to this huge task or these huge challenges, the challenges that the EU has in, you know, and it's a big organisation as well.
Yeah, it's like it's the kind of continual thing, and particularly when it's kind of post Brexit, where maybe before with certain issues we could kind of, you know, hide behind the UK in terms of the position it might have on us, on, you know, maybe with tax or foreign affairs or something like that. But now post Brexit, that, you know, Ireland has to kind of come out into its own, and there definitely needs to be kind of a bigger conversation about what Ireland wants from the EU, and, you know, the conversation is kind of happening now as we speak in terms of the Conference on the Future of Europe, where there's many local events happening, and we're in Cork today, next week we're in Galway, and then we're then in March, then I think we're in Donegal, and then we'll be in Dublin later again. So we're trying to have these opportunities to kind of, you know, ask people what do they want from Europe, less, more, or more of the same. And it's kind of a fascinating time in that sense, from a person like me and the kind of the policy hat that I'm wearing, that you have people, you know, willingly and wanting to come into a room and talk about the EU. Because when I did my undergraduate and master's, which is ever far away now, 2009-2010, and around that time it was the Lisbon Treaty, and, like, you know, there was the debate around that and the campaign, and then that's it. You know, it was kind of, you know, people didn't want to go near the issue of the EU again. So Brexit has kind of changed that, you know, that dynamic, that the EU is something very, very real, because you had for, you know, many, many weeks and many, many months, people, you know, explaining about the single market or the customs union, or, you know, and all these other issues that kind of are in the background, that are kind of going on the whole time, but were never really kind of brought front and centre into people's lives. But so Brexit had that, that if there's ever a silver lining in terms of Brexit, that was definitely one of those.
Well, that's the thing. I think if there'd been more education, even in the UK, about what the EU does and how they operate, and, you know, and what it would mean to Britain to be, you know, to have Brexit, I think a lot it could have changed things hugely, you know, because a lot of people didn't know really what they were signing out of, I suppose.
No, very, very true. And, like, one example that I can cite would be how Ireland uses the UK as a land bridge for transport, for lorries and stuff like that. And for about, and it only kind of came about because of when the single market was introduced in 1st of January 1993, I believe. And that's when kind of customs duties were kind of removed, and all those kind of checks at you know, ports and airports all kind of fell away. So you had, you know, overnight, well, over a period of years in the kind of mid-90s and the late-90s, then a lot of, you know, shipping services from places like Dublin and Rosslare were able to kind of accommodate lorries who could, you know, go from Dublin to Calais in about 12 hours versus, you know, if you go, say, you know, Dublin to Rotterdam or something like that by sea, it's maybe, you know, maybe 40 hours or something like that. So this thing that, you know, was there because of the common membership of Britain and Ireland at the time of the EU, made this thing work very, very well. And you had, you know, all this traffic was able to make use of that land bridge. But then with Brexit, that brought kind of challenges around, will there be delays at ports, is there more checks and everything else. And you've seen that now, where you have this explosion of direct services from places like Rosslare and from Dublin to France in particular, for those direct services. So if there's ever, like, a way for people to kind of highlight what is Brexit or what has Brexit done, if you look at the map for, like, DHDL, they operate a service from Rosslare to Dunkirk, and you know, you can see the line that goes around, you know, Cornwall, around the UK. And that's kind of the best symbol of what Brexit has done. People just have to, you know, find a way around the UK now.
Yeah. No, it's quite sad. You know what I mean? That just the lack of education for this, you know, something which ultimately has not probably paid off in the way that the government thought it was going to, you know.
Yeah. The Brexit dividends haven't come around yet, I think.
I know. One of the EMI's remits is to educate people about the EU. I mean, you're talking about your jet setting around the country to all these different places. How do you get involved with sort of, you know, Joe Soap on the street? How do you kind of interact with the public?
So we do that as many ways as we can. Usually through like social media is one tool that we use in terms of, you know, Instagram and, you know, Twitter and LinkedIn and like that. We would then try and reach out then to kind of local media stations and stuff like that, such as yourselves and everything else, where, you know, it is more. And as we found with COVID, other people do kind of rely on kind of the local, the kind of community kind of stations for them to kind of to key in for things. And like, for example, we have, you know, like a monthly kind of article with the Evening Echo here in Cork, where we do kind of focus on what is the EU doing for Cork with kind of funding initiatives or projects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that would be our main channels with that. So kind of through, you know, media, traditional media, and for social media. And of course, with COVID over the last 2 years, that was the only way we could go.
Indeed.
To reach out to people.
Yeah. So, I mean, if anyone's listening today and wants to find out a little bit more about what you do, where can they find information?
We've a website, europeanmovement.ie, and you'll find information about the Conference of the Future of Europe that we're part of. You can find a list to our podcast. You can listen back to our previous events, our kind of publications, and our Just the Facts series that we have. So you can find all that on europeanmovement.ie.
Thank you so much for talking to me today, Kieran. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, it's been delightful. Thanks so much for having me, Paula.
Cheers, Kieran. Thanks so much.
No problem. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye. So today I'm lucky enough to be chatting with Franzi O'Donnell. She's the Social Inclusion and Programme Lead at Dublin City Volunteer Centre. So welcome to the show, Franzi.
Hi, Paula. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. So we're talking today about EU cohesion policy and how it's helped various projects with funding for various things. Let's talk a little bit initially about the Dublin City Volunteer Centre. How would you describe yourselves? What is the work that you do?
Dublin City Volunteer Centre is really the hub for volunteering in the Dublin City area, as we like to describe it. So we're trying to look at everything to do with volunteering, and that's in terms of volunteers and also organisations that involve volunteers. So we have a big service to help people find volunteering. There's a database called iVol, or National Volunteering Database, that people could search, and we can give them advice and information and all that goes with that. You know, support to get people volunteering and make sure they have a meaningful volunteering opportunity and access to it as well. And then the other side would be about working with the organizations that involve volunteers. So that could be volunteer management, you know, about, you know, certain parts of the work, whether that's governance or other aspects around volunteering and involving volunteers.
Yeah. Is it very Dublin centric? I mean, do you only cover the Dublin area?
Yeah, it is, because we have 29 volunteer centres across the country.
Right.
So there is a volunteer centre in each county.
Okay.
And then there are four in the wider Dublin area. So because Dublin is a big area, we've split up the cake, you know, into different areas. So we have Dublin City, we have Fingal, South Dublin and Dalier Rathdown. So we're the Dublin City Council area. That's what we cover in Dublin City.
Fantastic. So let's talk a little about this EU funding. So, I mean, do you know how it all started with the funding, how it all kind of came about initially?
Yeah, we saw a call. The programme that we were involved in was called a Europe for Citizens programme, and that was run by the European Commission. And they put out a call for, you know, a call for applications for this particular funding stream. So they kind of give you thematic areas. So we saw that and went, like, do you know what, that could actually be great because it aligns with the work that we do, and it could be a really good opportunity to work with some European partners on, you know, on the topics. And I suppose we had some previous experience in working with European level projects, and it was a really positive experience. So that was a good incentive to say, let's do this again.
Yeah. So, I mean, how did it help you? I mean, was it, I'm assuming it was an invaluable source for yourselves as an organization.
Yeah. Getting the grant was just a really good opportunity to focus on a project, you know, that we got the funding for. The project that we ran was called Get Connected. And it was focusing on volunteering and shared European values. So it was a real opportunity to look at this piece about, you know, volunteering and values and what it means to people, and this piece about connection to your community and to each other. And it was just great to be able to really work on that, to work with our volunteers, but also to work with the other partners on the project. So we had partners in Belgium and Scotland and Croatia, and slightly different setups in each of the countries, and that made it really rich, you know, we could discuss things and we can talk about things and, oh, how do you do this, and what experience do people have in Croatia, and what do people think in Scotland, and that was really great to learn from each other as well.
So, I mean, was Get Connected, was there a lot of kind of research involved? Were you talking to various people, you know, maybe across just Dublin, and seeing, you know, what they felt about the EU and all that kind of stuff?
It was a bit more of a practical approach that we took.
Right.
We did some research as well. We have a report that's actually available on our website that incorporates that desk research. Mm-hmm. So that was looking at the the infrastructure of volunteering in the four countries, and the reason why we actually chose to as well, because we have quite similar population sizes, and, you know, to be able to compare that. And so we had the research to see what's the context, what's the setup.
Yeah.
But then we really wanted to talk to people about their experience in volunteering. So we only involved people in the project that hadn't volunteered before, so that we could really get an idea of how they felt, that they, you know, their values had changed through volunteering.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, that element of meeting before they started, and then and kind of filling in the survey after, so that we got some really good information. But we actually figured out as we went along, the doing it itself was really amazing for people as well. So we had the setup where we had these what we called conversation salons.
Yeah, yeah.
So people met to talk about the expectations and the values and how they felt in terms of being connected to the community and how volunteering can address issues. And that in itself was really valuable for people, that they could hear from each other and learn from each other and discuss these, you know, because values are such a kind of, you know, identity topic, and people feel really strongly about certain values and what they mean to them and how they can be lived. So the conversations themselves actually offered an opportunity for people to be really involved, and that gave us then some really good insight for the project itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah It sounds like it was a bit of a learning experience for yourself as well, you know, you were kind of learning at the same kind of pace as the other people that were learning at.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that was one of the purposes of the project, that we said we learn from our project participants, and they learn from each other, and we compared across the countries and learned that way as well. And it was really nice because we had at the end of the project we had a roadshow, like an exhibition, where we showcased some of the volunteers and their experience. So, you know, that was all the four countries we had from all the participants. We had a kind of a selection of the volunteers present.
Yeah.
And then I traveled through the four countries, you know, so it was actually really great to be able to say, have them all in a room, I'd be through photographs and their stories,
yeah,
but, you
yeah.
know, just to kind of see the makeup of that, and for other people then to actually come in and take away from that experience as well, and maybe get inspired or say, oh, that's very interesting, and, you know, actually I could connect with this person and their experience.
I mean, just out of curiosity, I mean, how have the last couple of years impacted you as an organization with the way the world has had to change? Has it changed the way the volunteer center works?
Yeah, it has. It definitely has. I mean, this project that I'm talking about was completed before the pandemic hit. Mm. So, you know, that was kind of before it all changed, which was nice to be able to finish it in that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, things have changed drastically in terms of how volunteering can be done, how people can engage, how organizations can involve people, and but also how people have, I suppose, valued more the community aspects of wanting to be involved and wanting to, you know, contribute. So, but yeah, for us as an organization and for the people in the organization we work with, a lot of change and a lot of, I suppose, opportunities to grow with that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose it's a learning experience, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Everyone's having to learn a new way of doing everything, basically, you know, as organizations like yourself.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, how are we going to do this in this? how are we now going to try and do this in a different way?
Yeah, and I think sometimes you just have to throw yourself into that, you know. So, for example, we were asked to help set up a volunteer program at one of the vaccination centres.
Oh, right.
And, you know, that was something that we obviously hadn't done before. You know, so it was new, but we were like, okay, this is it. This is happening. And we had to put it together at a very short notice because it was all happening so quickly. But it was a huge success. And it ran for 6 months. And we had almost, over 200 volunteers, 270 volunteers, I think, involved. And it was absolutely amazing to see what difference the volunteers made in the vaccination centre and what role they played, and you know, it was just something that we just said we get involved in and we make it happen. And obviously it was the volunteers who ultimately made it happen, but I think that's the type of change and adjustment that you have to be flexible to say, okay, there's a lot of things that weren't happening because of COVID, obviously, in the lockdowns, but other opportunities come along then, and things keep moving, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it must be great as a volunteer, you know, looking at things from the other side, you know, learning new skills and having organisations like yourselves that offer these opportunities to people that they might not necessarily get anywhere else across the city, across the country.
I think so. I think for organisations that involve volunteers, it's really of great value to have us as the volunteer centre as a connection piece between people that are looking for volunteering and being able to then involve them. You know, that's through the database where an organisation can just put out a call to say we need volunteers to help with this, or that could be us as the volunteer centre to say we're running this program now, you know, get involved. So, for example, we have another new program that was actually born out of the pandemic as well.
Yeah.
It's called Community Volunteers, and it's an opportunity for people to sign up to the program to become a community volunteer and then volunteer at different local events, or if there is an urgent need arising, like say if we have now there's a storm and there could be something happening where all of a sudden we need to get together as a community and help out. So that was set up during the pandemic, and that's in full swing now, and it's really great to see that, you know, it's a way for people to kind of do more short-term or once-off volunteering, but still being part of this program, you know. So that's up and running now, and that's happening.
That's incredible. You know, all we hear is, you know, all people want at the end of the day is there's this touch of community spirit, to feel part of something bigger, and even giving a couple of hours of your time to a greater cause is just so, you know, can make you feel so good at the end of whatever you're doing.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's what we hear from the volunteers that are involved in all different types of volunteering, you know, that they really feel that they're making a contribution and that it's of great value, but they're actually getting loads out of it themselves as well. You know, it's that feeling of you know, being involved in the community, being able to contribute, meet new people. I suppose especially during the pandemic, a lot of people said it was the only way of getting out of the house and keeping their sanity, you know. So there's loads of different aspects to it that are really fantastic.
I mean, so if there's anybody out there that wants to get involved with yourselves and they're listening in today and you're thinking, wow, this group sounds amazing, I would love to get involved, how do people get in contact with you to find out a bit more information?
I suppose the website is a good place to start, even just to get a bit of an idea, and our IVOL National Volunteering Database is there. So if people just want to have a look to see kind of different types of volunteering opportunities that are available at the moment. So the website is at volunteerdublincity.ie. And they can also just get in touch with us. Email is probably the best way at the moment. So the email address is info@volunteerdublincity.ie. And, you know, we can give advice and information about volunteering if someone wants to sit down and have a chat, you know, or if they just want to have a look on the website and see if there's anything that kind of tickles their fancy apply straight away through there, you know. So I suppose that's a good place to start.
Yeah, I mean, are there particular sectors that you cover, or is it could be literally anything and everything?
It could be anything and everything. Yeah, it's really varied. So yeah, I think it's anything from, you know, charity shops to the community volunteers that I just mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at the moment we have a vaccination centre and the RDS that we have volunteers involved in, but there's loads of other things as well that, you know, sorry, it's just so broad.
That's,
you know,
okay. No, I'll put you on the spot there a little bit. No, it's all right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You know, there must be loads of people out there thinking, I'd love to volunteer, but I've just got no idea how I go about it. And it's amazing that there's organisations like yourselves that can help people say, oh, these guys need some help, and you can go, well, that's fantastic. Do you know what I mean? You're a great kind of intermediary for the public and helping them to help other people.
That's the idea, and that's what we're here for, and we're really, really happy to talk to anyone that's interested and doesn't know where to start as well, you know. So that's really what our role is, to help make that first step, you know, and get people into something that they enjoy and they find a good way to spend their time.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, Francie. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Paula.
So, that's all from us this week. I hope you enjoyed the programme. Thank you so much to my guests, Kieran O'Driscoll from European Movement Ireland, and also Francie O'Donnell at the Dublin City Volunteer Centre.
Europe in My Backyard is financed by the Department for Regional and Urban Policy through the European Commission.